Let's turn our Bibles to Genesis chapter 41 and come to a peak in the story of Joseph. You remember how he is the eldest son of the beloved wife, late wife of Jacob, and he was hated by his half-brothers. I think chiefly because he was the favored son among them all by their father Jacob, but he had also started talking about dreams that God was giving him, dreams that seemed to indicate at some point they would all be bowing down to him, including mom and dad. And so you know how it progressed. They decided he should go. Some of them wanted him dead. Others wanted him just to die. Instead of actively murdering him, they were just going to let him die of dehydration in the bottom of the pit. Some were trying to save him in the midst of that, mostly because they wanted to not be any worse with dad in relationship, maybe even try to repair a bad relationship with dad. But eventually, they just sold him into slavery. He ends up in Egypt. He ends up on the bottom tier of the slaves, the servants, in the household of Pharaoh's head butcher. And I do think that was literally the case. He seems to be the head of food services at the palace. And things go very well for Joseph, which causes things for Potiphar to go very well. And then Mrs. Potiphar comes into the mix and makes multiple passes at him until finally she ends up crying rape or attempted rape. And Joseph ends up in the pit, in the work camp, if you will. He starts doing all the menial jobs at the bottom, but eventually, because of the blessings of God in his life, he ends up taking care of everybody. He does all the work assignments in the pit. And then he interpreted correctly the dreams of two high officials of Pharaoh, also in food services, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. One ends up executed, dead. The other ends up being restored. But he forgets his promise to intervene with Pharaoh on behalf of poor Joseph, who had been kidnapped and held as a free man as if he were a slave. So that was 2 years ago. Chapter 41 of Genesis, verse 1. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed. What did he dream? That he was standing by the Nile. So the Nile River is the significant river of Egypt. Egypt cannot exist without the Nile. The capital city, the place where this Pharaoh is administering, more than likely just lower Egypt, that is Egypt below the first cataract, I think, Egypt that is mostly populated in the Delta region. His capital city is probably just a little bit south of where the Nile River splits into its basic 7 streams that have created the Delta. And so he dreams that he's standing by that Nile River. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. Now that's a pastoral dream. It's a peaceful dream to see these big, fat, healthy cows wading in the shallows of the Nile and munching on the reed grass. But then his dream turns into a bit of a nightmare. Behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin came up out of the Nile after them. So he sees seven scrawny, skeletal cows following these seven plump cows up out of the water, up into the shallows. And then the scariest thing that he's probably ever seen happens. It says they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile, and the ugly, thin cows ate up the seven attractive, plump cows. Now, all of us have the benefit of watching movies and television where they do special effects, but you understand, all of us have an imagination that we pay nothing for the special effects in. And so can you picture these scrawny skeletal cows? Suddenly their mouths get huge and perhaps they've got big sharp teeth and they attack and swallow down the seven fat cows. And apparently, as he explains later, they didn't get any better looking after they'd gobbled up the seven fat cows. So Pharaoh awoke at the end of verse number 4, probably sweating and his heart beating really fast. All of us know what it feels like to wake up from a scary dream. All right. So after a while, apparently he fell asleep and he dreamed a second time. And it starts as another pastoral scene, a peaceful scene. Behold, there were seven ears of grain, plump and good, and they were growing on one stalk. So he sees this plant, and on the plant, it's got seven individual heads. Now, that's unusual for a plant, but they look really healthy. They look like the sort of thing that is going to produce really something special when it comes to harvest time. But then his dream goes sideways again. Behold, after them sprouted seven ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. Now, were they on a separate stalk or did they pop up on the same stalk? I don't know which. In my imagination, I put them on the same stalk. And then it turns into another nightmare. The thin ears swallowed up the seven plump, full ears. Now, of course, while cows have mouths, heads of grain don't have mouths. And so these things develop something they would never have in the natural world. And then they do something very strange. They actually gobble up the good ears. And again, the Pharaoh will say, and after they were done doing that, they didn't look any different than they were when they first popped up. And then Pharaoh awoke. Behold, it was a dream, which he's probably thankful for. Whew, I am so glad to be done with that. Except there's something that remains behind. It says, so in the morning, his spirit was troubled. You see, it's one thing to have a bad dream that's kind of weird and everything is kind of disjointed and stuff like that. But this dream had a different quality. These two dreams had a different quality to him. They seemed as if he were there. This is one of the aspects of divine dreaming, is they're vision-like. It's like you're participating and you can feel and hear and smell and it feels real to you. And so this dream, these dreams felt a little bit like that. And so he believes they have to be divine. They have to be God sent, or in his case, God's sent, plural. So he sent and called for all the magicians in Egypt. Now the magicians here, is the idea of those that know stuff about the spirit world. They study, they talk, and theorize, and they even participate in forays into the spirit world through drugs and meditation. So they're the experts in the spirit world as far as he's concerned. And so he sent for these magicians of Egypt and all its wise men, the people who studied things and made philosophical arrangements of how things work. Those are the two areas he talks about. The people who are kind of the part of the educational class, but also those that were part of the religious class amongst his advisors. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. So they hear the dreams, but they're like, we're not sure what it means. Now, part of that may be that God is blockading the ability for them to even guess at what these dreams might mean. Because God is the one who sent these dreams. So it is at this point when there is an impasse, when Pharaoh is not able to get an answer for the meaning of these dreams, that the chief cupbearer finally remembers he owes someone a huge favor. Verse 9, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard or the chief butcher, the head of food services, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. And a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the chief butcher. And when we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dreams. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office. The baker was hanged. So the chief cupbearer says, I apologize. I have neglected to keep a promise to someone. When 2 years ago, you, O Pharaoh, had a problem with us, two of us, and put us into the pit. We dreamed dreams, and there was a young man in that place with us that told us exactly what the meanings of those dreams were, and they came to pass exactly as he said. So what's he implying here? You need to check with him. So verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit, so out of this place where the prisoners are kept, and where they go and where they sleep and eat and where they go out from to do their whatever assignments that they're given. And so they grab Joseph, who's the head trustee, if you will. They grab him and make him presentable to appear before Pharaoh. When he had shaved himself, so if you're down here in the pit, you're not out in the public, which apparently he wasn't, then he just allowed, he was allowed or allowed himself to just grow hair. So he's probably got his beard, he's got his nice, perhaps curly, dark hair, he's got his eyebrows, all of these. Why am I mentioning all that? Because for some reason, historically, the Egyptians of this ancient time period, they didn't allow body hair. They shaved it all off, including the eyebrows, the pubic area, everything. The drawings and things you see, some of them will wear wigs in place of the hair, but you can see some portrayals where there's nothing. They're just a skinhead. They have no eyebrows sometimes, unless they've painted them on. And definitely no chin hair, although you'll see the Pharaoh has that little fake beard in a lot of the stuff. It's suspected that they had some issue with lice and fleas, that they were always concerned about that and somehow related the two. So first order of business is before Joseph come to the king, to Pharaoh, he has to get freshly shaved. Everything's got to go. And then he had to change his clothes. He was probably in the work clothes of the pit. And so now he's got a proper white kilt on, and he's ready to make his appearance before Pharaoh. So he came in before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said that you can hear a dream, and then you can interpret it." And listen to Joseph's answer. This is proper. Joseph answered Pharaoh, "Oh, it's not me. It's not in me. That's me, not me doing it. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." And I'm sure he used the term El or El Shaddai or El Elyon, some technical term for a God different than any of the gods that Pharaoh is associated with or knowledgeable about. So he's making it very clear, oh no, it's definitely not me. It's the real God, the creator God, the one God. He is going to be able to give you an appropriate answer for what your dream means. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Behold, in my dream, I was standing on the banks of the Nile. Seven cows, plump and attractive, came up out of the Nile, fed on the reed grass. Seven other cows came up after them, poor, very ugly and thin, such as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt." So even though this is repetition of material, it includes more information that he says they were scary looking, like nothing I've ever seen before. Verse 20, "The thin, ugly cows ate up the first seven plump cows. But when they'd eaten them, no one would have known that they'd eaten them, for they were still as ugly as at the beginning. And then I awoke, and I also saw in my dream seven ears growing on one stalk, full and good. Seven ears, withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprouted after them, and the thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears." So everything is on the table. "I told it to the magicians," the people who were professionals at information, whether gained by human terms or gained by spiritual, supernatural terms. "But there was no one who could explain it to me." Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are actually one. That is, they are a unity. They are united. They have one purpose. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one." Now, the specificity here is matching what we know about prophets. Prophets have to be 100% accurate in what they state, or they are not a prophet of God. Deuteronomy chapter 13. That's why there are a ton of people out there on the landscape that have claimed to be Christian prophets who have said things with specificity. It did not happen. Folks, they are false prophets. You should never listen to them again. Don't accept this garbage of, well, I still have a 85% or a 98% accuracy rating. Doesn't matter. A true prophet of God has a 100% accuracy rating in their specificity. So you could have guessed 7 days, 7 weeks, 7 months, but he states very specifically, we're talking about 7 years here. Verse 27, the seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. So two dreams, one meaning. Seven good years, like fantastically good years, followed by seven horrible, shocking bad years, such as you've never seen before. Verse 28, it is as I told Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. So this is God that's going to manipulate the weather patterns of planet Earth. And he will cause super, super good years, followed by super, super bad years. Verse 29, there will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, there'll arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. Now, you have to understand the impact of weather patterns. We've talked about this before with Abraham going down to Egypt during a famine in Canaan. The storm systems that come off of the Mediterranean or down from Asia Minor, Turkey, that's what waters the promised land. That's what fills up the water table with sufficient liquid that allows them to grow their crops, irrigate their crops, even in the drier sections of the country, and keep everybody well hydrated. So if that gets disrupted for a small period of time, and things start drying out, the people in Canaan can go down to Egypt because Egypt is watered by a different weather pattern system. There is a, we call it a monsoon sort of system that drenches central and southern portions of Central Africa, and it fills up the water tables, the watersheds that feed into the Nile. And then it moves on over to India and Indonesia. So that weather system, from time to time, gets disrupted. And the Nile will not have its normal flooding period. And so it'll be an off year, maybe a couple. But typically, it's not going to be more than a couple of years of disruption before the weather pattern in either place is restored. In the story we're about to read, both of those weather patterns get hit exactly at the same time. God turns the water off to Canaan, and God turns the water off to Egypt. Verse 32. The doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. So it is definitely going to happen, and it's going to start immediately. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. So now Joseph is being prompted by the Holy Spirit to provide not just simply the interpretation of the dream, but here's the action you ought to take, sir, to get ready for it. You need to find somebody that is a good administrator. Verse 34, let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years. So 20% of the crops in the next 7 years should be confiscated for storage. Verse 35, and let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities and let them keep it. So it's not going to be in one central location. It's going to be in multiple locations all over the Delta and all up and down the part of the Nile that this Pharaoh has control over. Verse 36, the food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. So if you confiscate 20% of super, super productive years, you're not just simply going to have 140% of a normal year. You're going to have 140% of a super good year, which means you can stretch it out over a 7 year period of not getting much at all. And so, verse 37, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?" Or possibly gods, since Pharaoh believes in multiple gods, and the word here is Elohim, which is plural. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you." So this is the third time now that he has recovered from bad things. He recovered from his brother selling him into Egypt by becoming the head of Potiphar's house. He recovered from being thrown into prison by becoming the head of the prison activities. And now here he is, coming completely out of prison and being made the vizier, or the second in command, the prime administrator of Egypt itself. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." And he took the signet ring from his hand, he put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And because we're out of time, we're going to mark our place right there and wait until next session to get into the Word.